This is the Man in Line on location.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line. We're live at the Royal Manx Agricultural Show. Day one today at Knockalo in Patrick. And if you're coming along, it really is a gorgeous day. A little breezy, so it's going to take the edge off that heat because it's a warm day today and very sunny. For the next hour, we're looking into, well, agriculture on the Isle of Man and the countryside, ecology, everything really, the future of the island's agriculture, food security, the role of government, recruitment, skills training, net zero, countryside management, agroeconomics and agribusiness business today, live with our guests at the Royal Show at Knockalo. And we're joined by Ian Parsons is here from the Manx NFU. Hi, Ian.
Hiya, how are you doing, Andy?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And Chris Neal, Director of Agriculture and Food at DEFA. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Andy.
Good to see you. The new boss at DEFA is Tim Cowsell. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. Morning.
Good to see you. And Bill Dale from Beach Buddies is here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Well, not at all, Bill. And just a quick plea here. You're looking for litter pickers Sunday morning, is that right?
We're going to come back here on Sunday morning. Obviously, the show ends tomorrow, so we've tried to clean up when the show Joe's running and it doesn't work, so we come back on Sunday morning, meeting here at 10:30, and everybody's welcome to come and join us.
Is it true you're picking up less litter, is that right?
At the Southern Show, we picked up far less litter than ever before, and we went down and had a quick look around on while the show was running, and I have to say, the word is getting round.
It was a busy show, wasn't it? It was really very busy.
Yeah. And today it looks as if it's extraordinarily busy here now.
So what do you attribute that to, Bill?
I think it's education and awareness. I think the Isle of Man has established a reputation now as being a very clean island. I was on Douglas Promenade this week with a company running an event, and cruise ship passengers walked past and deliberately stopped to say how much they appreciated what we were doing. They'd actually heard, these are American people, they'd heard about us beforehand, I don't know where from. So it was very kind of them to say so, and I think the Isle of Man generally, everybody is much more aware.
Now, often with volunteer groups, and you are a volunteer group, people, you know, people come and help you, things tend to tail off over time. And you've been going how long now?
It'll be 20 years in January.
20 years. Are you seeing any tail off in volunteers?
Absolutely not. In fact, this year is going to be a record. We're already, we passed 20,000 different individual volunteers. I mean, we're over 100,000 in terms of volunteer numbers over the years.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic. Schools is just brilliant. The education program's working really well. But there is a dark side to this, finance. We've got not a serious problem, but it's an issue, and it's not been that way before. And well, in fact, I'll tell you now, DEFA pulled the money on us a few years ago. That's not having a go at you. but to be honest, that has created a bit of a hole for us, and we need to replace that. So we do have some finance issues. We may have to just trim back what we do a little bit.
Right.
But you've got that. Times are tight.
FIM help you, don't they?
FIM Capital, very good. And the Scheinberg family have given us a generous donation every year for quite some time. And we have lots of good corporate sponsors giving us small amounts of money.
Yeah.
But FIM Capital have been very good, and the Scheinberg family. But we're in a situation where we're at a point where we need to make some decisions to make things better.
Okay, Tim Cowsell, newly appointed. How long have you been in the job, Tim, now?
This is my fifth day.
Wow.
So go carefully, that's all.
And previously, where were you?
I was at the Department for Enterprise for 7 years.
Right.
I was in the business agency responsible for the local economy and the export economy in the island. So I worked very closely with DEFA and did quite a lot around food exports and just saw the opportunity and thought it was a good place to move to.
What do you think you can bring to the job?
I guess being in Department for Enterprise for 7 years and prior to that banking is the commerciality around businesses. And I think we've talked about farming, it's a business, it's exactly the same as the makeup of the economy. There's a role to play within that, and I think that would be quite important to and the farmers want that. So keen to work with that.
Okay. there's pressure on agriculture. Everybody knows there's pressure on agriculture. The Manx agriculture businesses can't have the weight of numbers. There's not the amount of produce that they can provide to go into an economy across. So they have to, and of course we're under pressure from people trying to sell to us via the big supermarkets. So where do you see DEFA's role in this?
I think it's about a produce that runs through the economy. And so you've got the Manx produce tent today is absolutely chock-a-block with so many businesses. And, you know, last couple of weeks we've had the Great Taste Awards, massive numbers going through that. So there's a real opportunity. But I think there is a link in the supply chain that probably needs to be a bit stronger when we look at the farmers at the start of it and then ending up at the end. There's some really great success stories that can work. Look at the creameries, you know, massive tonnage of cheese goes internationally across... Yeah. The world from Canada to America, and that's a model that really has worked, that links that whole supply chain. I think we can learn a lot from that. Yeah. But there's work to do to make sure that all links in. But Manx produce is in a good place. Businesses have gone further. Some are in Tesco, some are not. But there is that support around that structure to allow those businesses to make those right decisions about what markets work for them. And the Manx public go out and buy really well in terms of Manx produce. There's more to do there as well in a local market. But you need that balance between exports and local markets for these businesses to be sustainable. And that whole links into the sort of the first thing I've said around that supply chain, linking from the farmers all the way out to local produce.
Right. I must say that normally Finlay MacLeod from the creamery is here. I think he's off and away, probably selling something somewhere. And as you say, that the model, the cooperative, if you like, of the creamery and going through to the final retail offering and internationally marketed, he's done a very good job. Ian Parsons is here from the Manx NFU. Fastermire, how are you doing, Ian?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Great to have such a sunny day for the show and good crowds here already, which is really good.
Okay, well, the NFU, you created a storm with the 6% of food eaten on the Isle of Man is made on the Isle of Man at the Southern Show. There's a petition out, isn't there?
Yes, we had the petition at the Southern Show. There was real interest, an awful lot of people signed it. It's also since gone online and it's there available to sign again today. That all, Andy, stemmed back from last November when the DEFA minister made a statement in Tynwald stating that only 6% of the food consumed on the Isle of Man was produced in the Isle of Man, which I truly found quite alarming. And I think the thing that was nearly more alarming was it didn't even seem to raise many eyebrows amongst Tynwald members. They just seemed to accept it. And I think that leaves us very vulnerable as an island.
I think everybody, when they heard that, so basically 94%, 94 items out of 100 come from elsewhere that are eaten on the Isle of Man.
Yeah, absolutely. Whilst I appreciate we couldn't 100% produce what is required on the Isle of Man, that figure could be significantly higher. There's some excellent quality produce produced on the Isle of Man, but it's just finding the shelf space and getting out there. And I'm not picking on Tesco's here. All the major supermarkets have a role to play in this. As I say, you know, Tesco's especially very supportive of the dairy sector. But there's a significant amount of fruit, vegetables, meat that could be on the shelves in our local supermarkets.
Okay, milling wheat and spuds, you know. I mean, spud, the Isle of Man, we used to feed 500,000 tourists in the summertime back in the 60s here with Manx spuds. Hoteliers used to call farmers up and they'd be delivered. Spuds, first of all, where are we with Manx potatoes?
Yeah, it's quite concerning on that because we've seen a number of spud producers go out of business or stop producing. They're not going out of business, they've diversified their business, but have stopped growing spuds this last few years. Whilst I have to say the likes of Robinson's are extremely supportive with local spuds, there's two major spud producers supply Robinson's. A significant amount of the potatoes we see sold through the local supermarkets are imported.
Yeah, yeah. So who are the potato suppliers now on the island?
There's several roundabout, but the main ones supplying Robinson's are Lochdu and Allinson's, but there's...
Allinson's were giving them away free last year, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely, and that was a result of spuds that had been grown with the... grown to sell through the ShopRite stores.
Yeah.
Obviously, we all know what happened there, and those spuds were already in the ground, and they were going to be dumped.
So, Ian, let's just talk about milling wheat then as well. Obviously, with Ramsey Bakery going a few years ago, no need for it.
No, I think it's about, Chris will probably correct me on this, but there's about 25% of the tonnage going into the mill that used to be going in. Obviously, some of that's going out in bagged flour, though, you know, there is a couple of Noah and Ross bakeries have probably ramped up production.
Yeah.
It's obviously nothing like what Ramsay were, though it is just quite alarming. Did I hear this last day or so that Tesco's are talking of taking Manx flour off the shelves, as there's a, you know, the mill are looking to put up the price slightly, and Tesco is saying it's too dear.
Right, okay. Chris, can you expand on that, the situation with milling wheat?
Yeah, I think we're down a lot from what we used to be pre-Ramsay Bakery days. But what we are seeing is Ross and Noah are stepping up to the plate. They're diversifying away from that white and healthy, that staple, and into high-value products. And it's taken a lot more time than we would like to grow that market. I think people's eating habits are changing. There's a lot of wraps, there's a lot of pitters. The standard loaf isn't as popular as what it was 20 years ago. And some of that takes to, you know, specialist equipment, specialist machinery. And we're working with the bakeries out there to help them fund some of that investment. I know Miles and Ross are doing some really exciting stuff in the pipeline and projects where they're trying to expand and trying to grow into some of these areas and access niche markets. And we're also, you know, just recently, we're also trying to do some local beer. There's 100 tonnes potentially that we could grow to satisfy our beer market. So we're trying to work with our growers to into niche high value products that we can grow successfully on the island.
Okay. Is it true? Is Murray Skeeting or is Manx flour going to disappear from Tesco? Do we know?
So from what I can gather, it's the same for everybody. If sales are low at Tesco's, then they will remove those products off the shelf and they will replace them with something that sells better. And they do that for all products. It's not something that they're going to do specifically for Laxey Glen Mills because of the price increase. I think from our conversations with Tesco's, they want to see more Manx flour sold on their shelves. They want to see more Manx produce on their shelves. But equally, they're a commercial business,
yeah.
And if it's not selling, they'll replace it and try to find something that the consumer will buy.
Yeah. Well,
so the message really is, if you want it, and to the general consumer, you need to go out there and buy it.
I think we need to be clear about this. We're not knocking Tesco. They're a very successful business. They're a gigantic business, a European business, and they'll see how much is being sold. You know, everything's measured on the shelf, isn't it, as to what the yield's going to be. So, and this is the point then. If high quality Manx stuff is that bit more expensive, how do you get people to spend that bit more money on Manx food?
Well, we're not going to cater for everybody in every budget. I think we've got to acknowledge that Manx produce is generally, you know, associated with a bit more of a premium, and I think that because it is seen as a premium product, we do go that extra mile. It is handmade. We do lose the best of ingredients, and because of that, the product, if it was anywhere else in the world, would be recognised as in that premium brand. And I think that's only right. You know, we are some, you know, we have some high value products that are made with a lot of love and a lot of care and attention. And I think that shines through with our producers. And as Tim says, if you go up to the Deffa tent, you'll see, you know, over 20 different producers all there producing some fantastic products. And they are pitching them at a high level. And the Great Taste Awards kind of support what we're saying here with that. You know, they wouldn't be winning Great Taste Awards if they weren't a high-value, high-quality product.
Okay, lots of people have come to the Isle of Man since COVID. Lots of people left after COVID because they were sick of it all. And lots of new people have come who perhaps don't understand the interweaving of Manx food and Manx countryside and Manx farming, and how the money spent on Manx stuff feeds into the Manx economy. What would you say to the people who don't quite get it?
I think for those people that are probably visiting or have come over recently, I think, you know, just take a minute, stop, just look around and take in, you know, the scenery, take in what you're actually seeing through your eyes, what you're hearing, what all those senses, and that is being delivered by our farmers that get no value, no recognition for the landscape, the aesthetics, the clean waters, what we take for granted, yeah. Andy. And that is what Manx farmers are delivering on a daily basis through their business and through their activities. And a lot of the time they were doing it for not a lot of profit, not a lot of recognition. And I think actually, you know, we've got some statistics that said that every pound spent on the island is worth £1.45, I think it is. Some of the initial work that we did 10 years ago kind of indicated that for every pound that we spent in the agricultural economy, that was worth £6 back into the economy through the agricultural industry. And we're just trying to revisit those figures at the moment to see how that fares now. But I think, you know, farmers are great for spending money. You've only got to look here today at the amount of shiny tractors that are about, and so they're not hoarding it away. They are spending it back into the economy, reinvesting it back into those family businesses, Andy. You know, okay. the huge family involvement in delivering food and high quality food. And I think, you know, if we weren't supporting local produce, I think we would see a very different island.
Okay. And if you want to start to see the connection, get yourself here to Knockalo today. It's on today and tomorrow. Of course, tomorrow's judging day. But it's a big day today. If you want to nip along, it's open till late this afternoon. And lots of people here for the moment. And we're going to be back in just a few moments' time on Men in Line.
All right, Paul. You're looking relaxed. You finally booked that trip?
Yep. Use some of the savings I locked in with Guernsey's Bank Skipton last year. Great interest rate, and they made it so easy.
Ah, oh, Skipton. I've been meaning to sort mine.
Do it. You'll get proper customer service too.
With market-leading savings rates and service that puts people first, Skipton International is here to help you feel secure, whatever you're saving for. For details on all of Skipton's savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com today. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
Q+. Q+ is much more than a plumbing and heating trade counter. Come and explore the largest bathroom showroom on the island, where we're always updating our displays and stocking the latest bathroom designs and trends to make sure we have just what you're looking for. Visit Q+ on Snugborough Trading Estate or find us on Facebook to see some fabulous bathroom inspiration. Q+.co.il.
Chain, there's no chain, the chain's jumped off the sprocket.
Test day action this weekend on the Jerby Airfield for the Andreas Racing Association's meeting. Under 16s get in free, adults are £3, there's full facilities, come and see us trackside.
Ethel Garage in Ballasalla is more than a Nissan authorised repair centre. Their team of highly factory-trained and experienced technicians will service and repair any make and model, with dedicated aftercare too. With Ethel, you get a competitive fixed-price menu and a courtesy car if needed. Pity this driver didn't know that.
Oh, great! I told you to go to Ethel!
Ethel, a garage to swear by, not swear at. Book now at ethel.im or call the A-team, 820082.
This August, we're celebrating National Coffee Month with our new competition, Latte Legends. If, like us, you can't function without your daily dose of caffeine, play along for your chance to win a Manx Radio travel mug and a coffee voucher, which you can use to fill your mug at any EBF outlet. All you have to do is check our Facebook page each Monday morning and identify the Latte Legend, a mystery music legend in latte art. Text your answer to 166177, starting with the word coffee, and every Friday afternoon, Chris Quirk will reveal the answer and three winners. Latte Legends with Ellen Van and Fuels and your nation station, Manx Radio.
This is the Man in Line on location.
Faster Mike, good afternoon. We're live at Knockalo through till 1 o'clock. Man in Line is on location. And a political member from Defford, Laurie Hooper, MHK, is with us today.
Hi there.
And who's Freya? You brought Freya.
Yes.
Freya is, what is she?
She's a border collie.
Jolly good.
Loves the day out, loves the show.
Loves the day out. She's paying very, very great attention. So as a political member in Defford, what's your role?
So mainly to support the minister, so I don't have a particular delegation. We all just kind of pitch in, which kind of works for Defford, I think.
Okay. Lots of people, and again from the outside, there's a minister and the political members. So are you asked to do it? Do you volunteer to do it? What happens?
So in this case, I volunteered after I resigned from Comin last October. I quite stupidly, in the corridors happened to mention that I'd be open to joining a government department, at which point the minister grabbed me, I think, before anyone else could.
Okay, did you know much about environment, food and agriculture previously?
Bits and pieces, so I've had engagement with the fish producers in the past, obviously because Ramsey has been being a working harbour, bits and pieces with the farming community, but no, by and large, most of what DEFA does is entirely new to me.
Okay, and how do you view it at the moment?
It's good, actually. It's a really good learning experience. It's very, very different to the stuff I'm used to, very different to what I'm used to sort of professionally as well. So, yeah, it's good. Generally, I think they do a lot of work. I was quite surprised, actually, at how much they do with so few people, if that makes sense. There's lots and lots of very good, very specialised people in DEFA, and they all seem to do their own very particular thing. But each of the teams themselves are quite small, so the breadth of what they cover is quite surprising. But, like I say, it's all done with very few people, by and large, which is quite a good achievement.
OK, well, I mean, you're a number cruncher by trade. You know your numbers, and the numbers for lots of people involved in agriculture don't quite stack up at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think there's lots of work going on at the moment with the agricultural support schemes to make sure they work and they're fit for purpose. And I know there's been quite a lot of engagement with the industry, I suppose. You call them over recent months and recent years to try and make that work better. I know there's a lot of concern out there about things like the meat plant as well. Obviously, that's a key part of some of our infrastructure, trying to make sure that works properly and also cost-effectively for the taxpayer. So, yeah, in terms of numbers, I think it is a challenging environment to work in. And when you look at DEFA's overall budget and amount of money that we actually allocate to the kind of farming food sectors on the island, it's very small in comparison to what we spend on some of our other sectors right. Across so through DFE and the schemes.
Okay, and with Tim Cass, I was going to bring up the meat plant, and the fact it was mentioned yesterday, Treasury Minister was on, the fact that they hadn't filed accounts for 2 years. With a business background, how do you see the performance of the meat plant?
So that's one of the first things that I've been looking at, working with the Minister, working with the political members to get a foothold onto it. I guess the whole thing about the whole sector and how it works and operates. The meat plant is a big part of the agricultural sector, and so it's important that it works and understands. So we are working with the board, we are looking at how it's all going, and the board are engaging with the producers just to get an up-to-date position on it. But, you know,
The public get conflicting views, and there's all sorts of skeet goes here, there and everywhere about the meat plant, about what's gone wrong, what's gone right, personalities. What's the way forward, Tim Cowsill?
I don't know at this stage. It's day four for me, so I am just collecting that information. I think there are some really committed people in there in the sector. Everybody wants it to work. That's the overall position that I've got. It's just how that works and how does it balance between, you know, the MNFU talking about that balance between exports and imports and what needs to be done to educate people about Manx meat as well. You know, I was quite shocked to the amount of scientists in the meat plant to understand the quality of meat, getting that sustainable part, the high quality of the product that's produced on island. And I think there's a real message around that for the Manx public to understand a bit more about what Manx meat is. I've gone to the UK and we've represented food at Isle of Man Food at the International Food Exhibition. There is always a want for Manx products and linking it to the biosphere and how it all could. We can really build something like the creamery in regards to grass-fed. That's been the thing that's really made the difference. There's got to be those points of difference for Manx meat as well. So I think it's a collection point. It's huge in terms of trying to understand how it inputs into the whole supply chain and comes out the other end. So there's a lot of work to do, but it is the priority. You know, the minister's been quite key that we review this and work with Chris and the team to get a plan for it. And I think that's the key part for it.
Okay. Ian Parsons, what's the Manx NFU's view of where the meat plant is?
Obviously, it's an essential part of the farming industry. As I'm a red meat producer, so it's very difficult to function for my business to function without a functioning meat plant. We've for numbers of years we've gone through challenges and changes of management, and stability is what's required. Yeah. But I think we need to appreciate it's a fantastic product that's produced on Ireland. It's produced to the best welfare standards. As Chris said before, that leaves a result of the beautiful countryside we see. But from farm to fork, none of the livestock travel more than about 20 miles to the meat plant.
Well, it would seem
the whole story is fantastic.
It would seem,
and
Ian,
frustrating that
we've got everything going for us. But the public,
it's a marketer's dream. We've got the biosphere status, an island status. We've got some of the highest health status in the world for our livestock. Animal welfare, absolutely top. Everything's there apart from the final piece in the jigsaw.
Okay, well, okay, so Chris and Neil, what's missing in the jigsaw?
I wish I knew, Andy. It's going to take a bit more work yet to get there. But as Tim says, you know, we're not short of passion and commitment. It's just pulling on all those resources together and trying to get that end game.
Can the producer stay in business while it's brought to order?
Yeah, they can. I hope they can. The prices that are getting paid are good at the moment, and certainly the markets look strong long term. I think there's some real positive outlook on the industry at the moment. And certainly in the red meat industry, things do look good, and it's a long time since I think farming from certainly a red meat pricing point of view, it's a long time since it's looked so strong for so long. Interestingly though, I think that's probably on the back of reduced numbers and certainly a constricted UK market.
Right.
People are doing less, there's less food about, and that's helping to drive prices up.
Okay, Ian Parsons?
And I think what's helping drive that up is supply and demand. And I think that's where, again, you know, food security becomes essential. You know, the UK is only about 60% self-sufficient in food. So I'm taking it back to where we started. As an island relying so much on imports, that food isn't always going to be there to import.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a message I can't emphasise enough. That we need to be more self-sufficient.
Well, the nearest we got to the big scare was COVID.
So absolutely.
When COVID happened.
The support during COVID was fantastic. It really was. But, you know, people lead busy lives. They appreciate that. So, therefore, the supermarket is the one stop to shop. So, we've just got to have that shelf space and the product there on the supermarket shelves for the consumer to have that choice.
Okay. Bill Daly, you were talking about the experience in France and how people buy food there.
Yeah, off air a few minutes ago. Yeah. I mean, you go to France and people buy their food in a market. They do go to supermarkets and buy other things, of course, you know, like tinned food and stuff like that. But the, you know, meat and vegetables is
and
all
cheese, and cheese as well.
Yeah, but you know, that's where we're making a mistake, I think, here, is that we're underestimating. You know, we talk about it all the time. The quality of the products that we have in the Isle of Man are fantastic, absolutely fantastic, and we don't sell it. You go to Tesco and it's hard to find Manx produce. Obviously there are little bits here and there. As you walk in, it's almost like a token gesture, this is where you buy some Manx stuff, but you walk around the aisles and it's just very difficult to find. So the culture in France is that you at the weekend you go to the local market. Now there's a market in near me in Lazare, which does very well, and there's another one on the Sulby Road which does very well, and outside of that, I don't think there's hardly any. Maybe, is there one other in the south? Not that I know.
Were there ever markets like that on the island?
I mean, my dad ran the post office in St. John's, and on a Saturday morning, the local producers would bring along all of the local produce. You know, I mean, obviously, things like tomatoes are only in the summer, but potatoes all year round, and meat, and sausages, and all sorts of things dropped off at the shop. We sold a lot every single week, and that's the way it worked, and that's almost like a little mini market that we had in St. John's. I mean, that's disappeared decades ago. I think also the public needs to think a bit more clearly about how we support local producers. When you go out shopping, buy Manx. Don't settle for other stuff that's on the shelves. Buy Manx. If it costs a little bit more, you're helping everybody. And then you'll have the whole thing will run a full circle. I mean, I'm a great believer in that. It's a shame. I've been here invited kindly by you the last 3 or 4 years. We've had this same conversation over and over again, and nothing changes. We've got to start thinking about each other. And I mean, that figure, that shocked me when you said the other day, 6% of local produce. I mean, it's staggering, really. I if you'd asked me to guess, I might have said 25. 6%. I mean, we should be ashamed of that, really.
So how do we break the chain, Bill?
I think, why not?
How do we break the chain?
I think the answer is for more of us to think about, and farmers, why not open a market? Why not have, you know, a large marquee in somewhere like this every Saturday morning where people can come and buy local produce, fish and meat and vegetables? Let's do it in 3 or 4 places. At least give it a shot, because nobody's trying it at the moment.
Okay. I want to talk to Tim Castle now, Chief Officer at DEFA. We've talked about agriculture, the fishing industry on the Isle of Man.
Can I just go back to Bill's point just 1 second? I think Department for Enterprise do run a range of schemes that if people do want to start setting up markets and to try and take some of the, you know, it's a big jump to go and do something like that, and other people have done it, but there is support there. There are schemes under the Domestic Event Fund for people to set that up.
And how does that work? How would somebody get involved?
So the Domestic Event Fund is very much focused on taking the risk out for businesses to take events to go forward, so they can apply for up to 80% funding to run something like that, which will cover the cost, or to get somebody in to support it and do the marketing and overview. So that's access there, and I know a lot of local commissioners have also looked at sort of plans to do that, so there's definitely a conversation to have with your local commissioners. You know, when the food and drink festival stopped 2 years ago, a lot of things have popped up as a result of that in terms of festivals, but not really anything that comes on a weekly basis or a monthly basis. So there is support there for people to go out and get that, and it's a big task, but you should definitely speak to the team there. They'll be able to help you and work with the local commissioners to do that. There's some great initiatives that have happened across
before
the
we get to fishing then. The Food and Drink Festival, any hope of it coming back?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my previous role, so Department for Enterprise is now responsible for the marketing and overview of food and drink, just based on what happened with the exporting. So a plan is being built, and there should be an announcement in the next couple of weeks around the future of it. And there's been loads of engagement with the sector to understand what works. That, you know, events like this make a really big difference to the producers, to be able to, one, to be out there at the right time, but also to get the numbers through their businesses so that they're supported and to do that. So we've all agreed that it's a really good thing, the Food and Drink Festival. The plan around running it this year, the producers kind of agreed collectively that they didn't want to do it badly, rush it this year to get it out to look for next year. So it's been done in consultation. There's a lot of work to do, but expect some announcements in the next couple of weeks around that.
Okay, and fishing. The fishing industry on the Isle of Man. What state is it in?
So, I do know a little bit around the fishing sector. You know, it was bigger, considerably bigger. Yeah. It was a big part of the Manx economy for years. The opportunity is there. The seabed and the regulation around fishing is in a really strong position, and the team at DEFRA have done a really good job to make it world-leading in that regard. We now need to just build everything around that. You know, sustainable fishing is the way forward, and that now framework is now built and is being developed, and there's more coming out. And the opportunity around fishermen to have more opportunity to export, to develop, you know, the numbers that are exported off Ireland are absolutely huge at the moment, but there's bigger opportunities there to develop that and to also the Manx fish to play a bit more of a position on Ireland. But there's a lot going on in terms of the regulation, and that has been the focus, and now its next stage is to look at that structure around the economy and the sector around it.
Okay,
the
exports, is that queenies or fish?
Yeah, queenies, your whelks, your king scallops, they're the main position of what's exported off island and go all around the world. It's a great story, but it just needs to. It probably just needs some support and overview to move it on.
Everybody was worried about Brexit. Has Brexit affected the export of queenies?
I don't think on a legislative point of view, no. But there probably is more paperwork and overview to do to export that product now than there was before. But markets have been open. The team have worked really hard with the Cabinet Office to make sure that the Isle of Man has the routes out of the for the fishing industry to export.
Okay, I just want to explore that. The concept of the public event fund?
Domestic event fund.
Because when people come to the Royal Show or the Southern Show or they go to the farmers markets, they're confronted with Manx produce, honey, all sorts of things. I buy honey from the Manx markets. Best honey in the world is Manx honey. But it's having that warm and fuzzy feeling when you're at a place like this, but when you go shopping and the darn thing's not there, is it a matter of persuading, cajoling, legislating for the producers? And obviously the producers, the retailers have got a business to run. They've got shareholders to please.
Yep.
But, you know, this is the Isle of Man. It's not a district of England. It's, you know, we're our own nation.
I, I think it's unfair to say just link that at the supermarkets. You know, Robinson's you can go and buy Manx honey, and you can buy it in corner shops, you can buy it across the island. It's just been at the right place, but going for giant supermarkets isn't for every producer. It's just the economies of scale don't work. And if you've got businesses like Robinson's that help develop those businesses to the scale that they want to be, and that works. But there are a range of business. You know, EVF is a great business. There's full of local produce when you go to the petrol station. So it's horses for courses, I would say. I think if you know you want to learn more, go to the tent, go and speak to the DEFA team that are stationed there, and DFE are also there if you want to talk about the domestic event fund and those parts. But you can see those businesses doing well. They've got the Great Taste Awards, they've got the markets that they want to go into. So but I would just say that the large conglomerates aren't for everyone, and they shouldn't be. So okay, they can work for some.
Here we are today. Laurie Hooper is here, MHK, Bill Dale from Beach Buddies, Tim Cowsell, you've just heard, from the Chief Officer from DEFA, Chris Neal is the Director of Agriculture and Food at DEFA, and Ian Parsons from the NFU. We're live at Knockalo till one today.
Suffering with joint pain or severe migraines, whether it's from an injury or ongoing illness, you don't have to suffer in silence. The Crowther Clinic at Hospice Isle of Man in Strang offers expert private pain management tailored to you. And the best part, every penny of profit goes straight to supporting free hospice care for our community. Take control of your pain and feel like yourself again. Visit crowtherclinic.im or call 647 450. Crowther Clinic, private care with purpose.
Here's to the hard-working heating machines that have kept us cozy. Let's big up the boilers that keep our hot water flowing flawlessly. But now, it's time to give your boiler some tender loving care with a service from Manx Petroleum. With affordable service plans for oil-fired boilers and tanks, you can spread the cost interest-free using our budget account. Make your boiler brilliant again. Visit mp.im for more information. Manx Petroleum, always here for you.
Discover your dream home in Andreas with Kell Developments Limited. Their quality new build 2, 3 and 4 bedroom properties offer countryside living with amazing views just 5 minutes from Ramsey. These spacious homes are built for modern energy efficient living with ground floor underfloor heating and air source heat pumps, plus contemporary kitchens, beautiful bathrooms, landscaped exteriors and more. Reserve yours now. Kell Developments Limited, Oatlands Road, Andreas. Island living redefined.
Check out the Groudle Glen Railway summer timetable for some great days out. Visit the Clifftop Tea Rooms and Sales Emporium, book a special steam tea and join our free family train spotting challenge. Hop on the line that goes uphill to the sea, the Groudle Glen Railway. For times, see ggr.org.uk or visit on Facebook.
The previous message was brought to you by QVH, the island's premier serviced offices and co-working space in the heart of Douglas. Call 639 940 for more information or visit qvhpremieroffice.com.
Next week here on Manx Radio, we're going back to the glory days of tourism in the Isle of Man during the 1960s and 70s.
I wanted to come out to the Isle of Man. So many people must have heard it was absolutely buzzing. It was so much to do, crowds of people.
And some of the girls was coming over to the Isle of Man. I'd never really heard of it. And said, do you fancy going? I thought, why not?
Tune in to Island Life next week for the comeovers to relive a golden period for tourism in the island. 5:30, Tuesday on Manx Radio FM.
This is the Man in Line on location.
Look at that time. It's 16 minutes now before one. We're live at Knockalo. Man in Line is on with Laurie Hooper, MHK, Bill Dale from Beach Buddies, Tim Cowsell from DEFA, Chris Neal from DEFA, and Ian Parsons from the NFU. Ian, there's something really serious was on Countryside a few weeks ago. You'll know a lot about this, and it is the mental health within the agriculture industry, within farmers. It's lonely out in on that tractor all day long. It's a lonely business, and sometimes when the finances are biting at your ankles, it's a bit grim sometimes.
Yeah, it can be a very lonely, dark environment to work in. We are trying to, the NFU along with others, do a bit about that and try and help facilitate. There's a section up on urge people come along to the NFU stand. We've got some stuff up there, but It's usually financially driven, I think it's fair to say. It's usually pressures of financial pressures. Cash flow is probably the biggest one, more than profitability within the industry. We're limited to where we can sell product and just bring cash into a business. And it's when you're working on your own or those times at night time where things like that can escalate. And yeah, it's probably one of the biggest worries within the industry at the moment.
Those Sunday night chats over the kitchen table when suddenly the figures don't quite add up.
Yeah, absolutely. I like half past seven every morning, I used to sit around the table with my dad, and that's where everything like that would be thrashed out. And if you don't have that ability to do that, it can be a lonely place on your own, spinning it around in your head. And farmers are very proud people, and they don't really always want to talk about those financial pressures. But you know, I urge everyone out there, please do. And there's always people out there that
well,
they can talk.
The thing is, in the tip of your iceberg, if you like, are the two shows. Everybody knows the young farmers, and everybody thinks all young farmers, all farmers, are everything's absolutely fine. But there's a balance to that, and the balance is obviously running the business, something that's not immediate, something that you're planning often years ahead, and something that can go wrong at a moment's notice.
Absolutely, it's a very long term business, agriculture. The planning in advance, breeding programs, you know, you're working, whether it be livestock, crops, you're working several years in advance for a market price that you don't know what it is. Like when we sell our product off farm, we don't even know that day what we're getting paid for when it leaves our farm. So, you know, trying to cash flow, budget, stuff like that, it can be very difficult. And as I say, you know, you're businessman as well as often the main worker on the business as well. So it's just sort of juggling that office work alongside doing the actual physical work. And sometimes it's easy to shy away from that and just bury yourself in the busyness of the farm.
And often it's a family business, and often some members of the family don't want to work in the business.
Yeah, and it's a very difficult business, and nobody that doesn't want to work in it should work in it. You know, you've got to want to do the job, because it isn't easy. It's a, you know, I love what I do. I'm fortunate. I enjoy what I do every day when I go to work, or most days. But it's not easy, and you know, whether it be juggling the financial side of it or the physical work side of it, it is difficult. But it can be a very rewarding job too.
Okay, Chris Neal, just talking about this business of farming and getting into the business of farming, you've obviously seen many people farming over the years, some successful, not as successful. Is there a, I mean, can you tell who's going to be successful in farming? Can you, do you know if somebody's got it or they haven't?
No, there's no formula, Andy. I think what I do see is that the people with the passion really shine through. The people that are open-minded really ask the important and often the overlooked questions. And I think, you know, those that are willing to adapt and just overcome and push past the normal and ask why, they seem to go a little bit further.
Are people still coming into agriculture? Are young people still...
We have a huge amount of young people out there that are chomping to get into the industry.
Have you told them all the facts?
They're well aware of it, and they are farmers' sons and daughters. They are friends and family, and they are desperate to get into this industry, which is amazing. I think now more and more we're seeing a wide range of jobs that are associated with agriculture, so you don't just have to be the farmer. I know if you go to any of these tractor stands, they're crying out for mechanics, agricultural mechanics. So, you know, whether you're a caterer, whether you're a feed nutritionalist, these jobs are in demand. And just last week, I was sent an article of the most important jobs in the next 10 years. And agriculture was number one, because there will be a lack of people.
Yeah.
So the prospects for agriculture are huge, and building on, you know, some what Ian's just said around the green welly, the yellow wellies and the green grass campaign that I'm involved with. Some of the work that we're doing at DEFA is around the knowledge exchange program that we operate. We've just been through a review period of that. We've done 4 years, and we've learned from that, and what we are looking at in the next between now and Christmas, we're going to run a series of evening meetings for our agricultural industry, We've got a lot of speakers lined up coming from the UK that are just going to come and talk about their businesses. We've got a young shepherdess that's coming. She won the Farmers Weekly Shepherd of the Year competition. We've got a young dairy farmer with no agricultural background whatsoever, who's now a successful dairy farmer in North Wales, and he's coming to talk to us about his story. We've got people that are specialists in succession. It's a family farm succession.
Right.
And they're going to come and talk to us.
Just tell us, what's the Yellow Welly thing?
So Yellow Wellies is the National Farmers Union mental health campaign in the UK. So I know they were here last year with the Farmers Union here, and we've sort of worked with the Farmers Union here and leveraged off the back of that to do green grass.
How long have you been in the business, Sir Chris?
So I'm born and bred, farming family. I've been 2 years, 20 months in this job. Prior to that, I was an agricultural consultant, so working with farmers on their businesses and on their finances.
I'm just interested to know, and you say there's a queue of people, young people wanting to come. You've told them about the late nights and the early mornings.
They're doing it. They're doing it now, Andy. They're out there in the industry supporting our farmers. They're out there doing the work now, but they're just struggling to get to the next level.
Right.
And that's the challenge. You know, they're the labour force on these farms, and our farmers wouldn't function as well as they do without these young guys. And, you know, often enough, you don't need somebody full-time. You just need somebody for a day, for a couple of days to come in, to jump on a tractor.
Right.
And these young guys are going around the island, filling these gaps. But it's a big challenge for them to take the next level and get their own land, to get their own farms. And that's the bit that they're struggling with. So some of the work that we are going to do is around how we can best help young farmers and young fishermen. I had a conversation with our fisheries policy last week, just the other day, Jack, and I said, you know, we need to get a bit more innovative around our young fishermen and our young farmers. How can we help them guys into the industry that is hugely capital hungry?
Yeah.
You know, buying a fishing boat, buying a tractor, buying a farm, it takes a lot of capital. So how do we get innovative? How do we find different opportunities, different ways to get these guys into the industry cheaply and easy, but also give them the skills that they can run highly profitable businesses that is there to pass on to their children? So these are the questions that, you know, we're working our way through.
Are you glad you made the jump into this job?
Are you incentivised? Are you encouraged yet, Andy? Yeah. Because... You know,
we're glad he made the jump into the job.
Oh, really? Yes.
Farming is a tough gig. You know, a family of farmers. I do still farm. It is a tough gig, but hugely rewarding. And it's changed so much because of the amount of capital that's involved, the amount of money that's involved. I'm sure in previous programs you've talked about the price of fertiliser, of inputs.
Yeah.
And they're more manageable.
Has fertilizer gone up?
It's come back from where it was.
Right.
But we just need to understand better, I think, how we can work without it. We have a huge opportunity on the Isle of Man with our climatic conditions. We can grow more grass. We can grow more crops here that we currently don't. So when we talk about food security, me and one of my best friends, James, grew quinoa for a couple of years. So we demonstrated that quinoa can grow on the island.
I remember that. What happened to it?
We just got busy with our lives and other stuff, and it had to get parked up. But
so quinoa will grow on the Isle of Man?
Quinoa will grow on the Isle of Man. Sweet potatoes.
Right.
We grew garlic. You know, there's huge opportunity to grow a lot more crops.
So could you grow quinoa at scale here?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, we could.
That's interesting.
The challenge with a lot of these things is how we access, like we've already been talking, how do we access the consumer? The quinoa market has moved into a bit like the bagged rice that's ready, microwave ready. You just tear the pouch, put it in the microwave, 2 minutes later it's ready. And that's, for us as a quinoa grower, that's what we were up against. So how do we get it to the consumer in a format that the consumer wants to buy it? And that's one of the big challenges. I think, you know, Bill highlighted the the markets, and I think for some people it's a direct-to-consumer model that we need to explore, and we need to help producers go down that road. So we have the potential to do some kind of online buying platform, a bit like the food assembly used to be all those years ago. I think that's got a lot of potential that we need to put more effort into it and really start to drive that home.
Okay. Good. Right. I just want to talk briefly. We've talked about food and agriculture, and we've talked about fishing, but the environment as well. Obviously, we know, and I take it you're only a few days into this role, but obviously, Arch Allaghan's back open again, and there's some plantation culling going on because we see all the logs going through Ramsey as well. What's that situation, Tim Cowsell?
Well, I'm not a forester, so I have to sort of start with that, but there is a process that trees go through. And it's a circulation, and it's an ecosystem that supports that. So, you know, there is stuff going down, but there is an older stock that's been there. And it's an opportunity for the island in terms of exporting logs, and it should support itself. So I am learning, but I have been out to the plantations and I look around, and it's amazing the scale of what's going on there. Good. But it's completely natural.
I think there's
a lot to talk about messaging there. We could be here for a long time.
Well, we'll do it again sometime.
No worries.
Come back onto Man in Line as well. We're just about out of time. I would just want to go finally to Bill Day. We started off with a request for anybody who's going to be around on Sunday to clean up the site itself as well. And your coastal visits, Bill, are any places getting any worse, or is everything relatively under control?
Very, very much under control. We find far less Manx rubbish on the beaches now than we ever did. Because I think the education programs made a big difference, because children realise that if you throw something in the street, it goes down a drain in the river and out to sea.
Right.
Most of the stuff that we find is coming from, there's a lot from Ireland. We're finding things from South America, because the current from in the Atlantic Ocean comes up and ends up here. But there's less stuff on the beach without question now. And I think anybody who ever visits a beach will see that over the 20 years, it's been an enormous difference. But you've got to keep on top of it.
Okay, if you can help Bill, by the way, with some finance, he's going to be at the show and you can chat to him on Sunday morning. Thanks to Laurie Hooper, MHK, to Ian Parsons from the Manx NFU, Chris Neal and Tim Cowsell from DEFA. And we're back on Monday with Claire Christian.
WIN. T.